Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, the Athletic's Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I've got two lovely chaps with me this afternoon. Mr. Chris Woff's here. How are you doing, Chris? You okay?
In a relative sense, yeah. I've been a bit moody this Thursday afternoon, I'm not going to lie to you. But
it's not like you.
I know, well, but I'm delighted to see both of your faces, so yes. Oh, that was nice. That was a lie, by the way, but yeah. Oh, we'll pretend it was. Wow. We'll pretend there was some sincerity there.
Oh, well, fuck you very much, Chris. Thanks. That's great.
Stroppy Woff.
How are you, George? You all right?
Yeah, I'm okay. I had a little break from the pod at the start of the week.
You
but
did.
I'm here and I was full of enthusiasm until about 23 seconds ago when Chris opened his mouth. So that's... No, I'm good, raring to go. Good to see Newcastle get back to winning ways at the weekend and do so in such encouraging manner.
Fully refreshed now, George? Are you ready to take a run at this?
Oh, no, absolutely not, no. Fully refreshed, 33% efficiency.
That's good for you, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about standard.
I'm really, really annoyed, actually, that George missed the game that we got, like, hailed on and absolutely peed on by rain at St. James's Park. He could have brought one of his million jackets with him, then I could have borrowed it.
He's always got a jacket on hand, hasn't he, George Corkin?
Well, I'd like to dress. I like to dress appropriately for the circumstances.
It's good to have you back, Sean. It's been a while. Right then, we'll get into the extended weekend of football in a little bit, but we're going to start with our ex-sporting director, let's call him. You lads have been writing a bit about him this week. Chris, where do we stand at the moment with sourcing a replacement for Dan Ashworth?
Well, he's technically not an ex-sporting director. He's technically still employed by Newcastle United. He may be on gardening
leave.
That's
right.
Yes.
Sorry, gardener slash sporting director.
As we know, he's got his beautiful garden, which will probably look even more pristine since the last time we were there. So he remains on garden leave. Newcastle and Manchester United are yet, as far as we are aware, to come to any sort of agreement in terms of compensation to release him early from that, despite Sir Jim Radcliffe's ridiculous comments of the week. So instead, Newcastle are currently planning for the summer window without Dan Ashworth. The expectation being that there will not be a sporting director in place going into that summer window. Instead, Newcastle will revert to essentially what happened during the January 2022 window, to a certain degree what happened going into the summer of 2022 window, and the fact that Amanda Staveley, Maida Guduci, Eddie Howe himself, Steve Nixon, the head of recruitment, Andy Howe, now assistant head of recruitment, as we'll discuss a bit later on, they were heavily involved in both of those windows. There's a feeling inside the club that they are comfortable with that and confident that they can have a plan going into the summer and be able to deal with that, regardless of whether a sporting director comes in the short term. And the way that it looks at the moment is Newcastle are really still deciding what they want before who they want, as we said a couple of weeks ago. And so that there's still the possibility that a direct Dan Ashworth replacement comes in. There's a possibility that Newcastle could restructure the model a little bit. There could be split roles. It could take various different guises. For now, Newcastle are not going to rush into anything. They're going to sit back and re-discuss what they're looking to do going forward, and instead they're going to revert back to this previous transfer committee that they had and hope and believe that that will serve them well in what is going to be a very, very important summer window in terms of overhaul of the squad.
And George, you've been doing a bit of digging on what Dan Ashworth actually has done since he's been at Newcastle.
Yeah, because I think there's been kind of misinformation and certainly a bit of rewriting of history about what he has and hasn't done since he's been at Newcastle. I went back to that original interview that Amanda Staveley and Mehrdad Guduci did with me a couple of years ago, just at the point that Ashworth was about to come in. And they talked about what they'd found at Newcastle when the takeover happened, which was that they had all the verticals, as they called it, within the football operation, but that they were in silos. In other words, they had recruitment department, they had an academy, they had sports science, they had all of those things, but there was this mentality, really, of getting through to the end of the day, not fucking up, going home, being pleased if nothing had gone wrong. And it was properly in survival mode. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that they really needed was someone to come in and get these departments talking to each other. Now, that is what Ashworth did, and that is his great strength. He always described himself as the center of the wheel. They have all these departments. He's in the middle of it, getting everybody to talk so that there's a common theme. There's an identity. Everybody knows what's supposed to be happening. Everyone knows what the goal is. If in 2 years' time, it looks like Newcastle are going to need a fullback, for example, because, say, you know, Kieran Trippier's out of contract, or I'm just using this as an example, the academy can be working towards producing that type of footballer who will have the qualities that the manager wants. It's that sort of stuff. And, you know, speaking to people who work at the club, Ashworth's done very, very well at doing that. You now have an interconnected football club. Everybody's on the same page. There is this kind of common identity. You're working together. It's now built to thrive rather than just survive. And that has taken a bit of time. Now, the other thing that Ashworth has done is restock all of those departments. So it's no longer a skeleton staff, which is what everybody found when the takeover happened. Everything had been stripped back and outsourced. Those departments are now much fuller and full of very talented people. And that was seen as a key thing. Now, what one of the people that we spoke to sort of said, you know, everyone talks about recruitment. That's the sexy thing for the first team. But actually recruiting staff, the people who are going to be looking after those players down the line, is sort of the most important thing. That's much harder. And sort of setting out a template for those staff to work to is like gold dust. So Ashworth has done that too. Now, he's been less involved in transfers than some people would think. That's not to say he's not been involved at all, because he has been, and he has played a big role in that. But the thing that he's really done is restock the football operation, yeah, and get everybody singing from the same hymn sheet, which is obviously very important.
He was famously a club builder or a project builder, wasn't he, George? But do Newcastle still need a builder? Do they still need a centre of the wheel, a Dan Ashworth type person? Or
that's a fascinating question, and I think that's not apparent yet. And I think that's something that is being spoken about. It is very much at the beginning of this process. Sorry to use the P word yet again. We're back to that stage. Trust the process. And you know, not every sporting director is the same. Now, Ashworth was a builder, but he's also a delegator. He's someone who brings in really good staff, brings in experts, lets them get on with their job, facilitates them to get on with their job, tries to give them what they need. Other sporting, you know, there's no sort of blueprint necessarily for a sporting director. It can be what you want. Some sporting directors focus on recruitment. That's their speciality. Newcastle already have a decent recruitment department. Is that the area they want to beef up? Are the departments that have had Ashworth at the centre, are they strong enough to function on their own? Do they need somebody to come in and oversee things? Are they still building? Is there still a lot of building to be done? Those questions are still being asked at the minute. But I do think that's a fascinating question in terms of you know, what they're looking for, what they want the club to be, and are the departments and is the structure that Ashworth certainly helped create robust enough to survive without him?
I was just going to say that George often refers to himself as the centre of the wheel of this podcast as well. Just privately just says about how everything revolves around him.
Can you have a wheel with two spokes? I don't know if that... Does that work?
Do I say that? I think I'm spinning off in all directions. I think we need a set of stabilisers if we're going to carry on this analogy. Who are the stabilisers? It's not me, Jesus.
Ollie?
Maybe he's the stabilizer, very much keeps us stable, maybe, doesn't he?
We need a set of brakes because it's going downhill very quickly. There you go. There's a joke.
Yeah. It might be a wheel, but that tyre's definitely flat, isn't it? It's gone a long time ago.
Oh, good grief, yes.
Movement at Bournemouth this week, Chris, but nothing really that concerns Newcastle as far as we're aware.
Well, no, and I mean, I don't want to completely dismiss anything in terms of potential movement, but the early suggestions are that Richard Hughes, who is Bournemouth's, I think he's technical director is his exact position there, who has worked with Eddie Howe previously during their playing careers as well, he is leaving Bournemouth at the end of the season, and he's been linked with Liverpool, he's been linked with Roma, but the suggestion from several people we've spoken to is that he isn't set to come to Newcastle. That obvious link's been made, given his relationship previously with Eddie Howe, but the suggestion is that he isn't likely to be coming. As I say, I'm not going to completely dismiss that, but that seems likely. The same with Michael Edwards, who was formerly at Liverpool. Again, someone else who Howe both admires for the way that he sort of uses data within recruitment, but also Howe knew him from, they were colleagues at Portsmouth. Howe was a player, and Hughes was in the backroom staff there. But again, Edwards was in the backroom staff there. Again, it doesn't look at this stage like Edwards would want to take a position like that. Other names who've been linked already, there's Paul Mitchell at Monaco, Phil Giles, who's the the director of football at Brentford, who is also a big Newcastle fan. But as things stand, this still feels very premature. The same with links about, there's been suggestions that Steve Nixon, who has been on the course which allows you to be, or it basically is about sporting directorship in football, there's been suggestions that he could sort of step up with a position internally at Newcastle. I have said before, there could yet be a restructure. We aren't exactly sure. Mm. But all of this is very, very premature. Newcastle are very much, I wouldn't even say they're at the start of the search. They're at the pre-stage before the search, really, before they start narrowing down these names. They will have people they like. They will have people from the last time they're looking for Dan Ashworth and people they admire. But in terms of suggesting that any of these are going to be the next sporting director, if indeed that is the position at Newcastle, is very, very premature.
So who's kind of doing Dan Ashworth's job at the moment, George? If he's away, you know, potting the plants and mowing the lawn, who's actually doing his work at the moment?
Again, it's a very good question, because the answer to that is nobody, really. And it's a huge job, the sporting director job. Some clubs have an assistant. Newcastle don't. You could argue that perhaps that might have been something that they would look to do. It hasn't happened yet. Basically, everybody is doing their own jobs. They're doing it, you know, there are really good people. You know, you're talking about Steve Harper at the academy, for example, really good, knows exactly what he should be doing. And you can say the same thing about, you know, most other departments. They're okay. For the moment, they're okay. I mean, we've been told that Darren Eales is more present at the training ground at the minute. That's probably quite important, that he's able to, to be a visible presence there, someone that people can go to. Because obviously, you know, Ashworth was involved in signing off contracts. People need stuff. He was their first port of call. And so you need someone to do that. So there's a bit of that going on.
Yeah.
As Chris has already mentioned, in terms of transfers, there was already a solid base. There was already a solid group of people who were working on transfers. Ashworth was involved. He got involved, certainly in the latter stages of deals. But they'd already shown that they could do that before he arrived. And everybody at the moment is sort of saying that there's no rush and they'll be able to do that again. So at the moment, it's all being shared out between them, and those departments are kind of running themselves. What you don't want to get to is a situation that Ashworth walked into, you know, where those departments are kind of existing separately, might be doing okay on their own, but not communicating, not all aware of each other's needs. But anyway, I don't think that is the case at the minute, because, you know, from our conversations, that's all happening. It's a much more connected organization. People believe that they're talking to each other, they're aware of what each other needs, and that's going on. But you don't want that to carry on like that forever.
Chris, you mentioned Andy Howe earlier on. This is a bit of a post-Ashworth shuffle, isn't it? But it isn't quite what it seems.
Yeah, I mean, it actually isn't a post-Ashworth reshuffle, which is why it doesn't seem what it seems. It's been suggested in some quarters that's not what it is, but we're led to believe that actually Andy Howe's position has not been, he hasn't been promoted per se. It's more that there's almost been a redesignation of his title.
It's a rebadge. It's a rebadge, you fool. Yeah. That's what it
exactly.
is.
Rebadged it. So that basically the suggestion is that it more reflects what he actually does. I mean, he came in and he was the head of technical first team scouting at Newcastle, which even people within the industry said they didn't really know what that meant. Yeah, they didn't really know exactly what that meant. But essentially, he's been heavily involved in recruitment since the very first window. The time people thought he'd come in mid-January 2022, he'd actually been in since before that window, was influential during that window and has been since. And his position has changed so that he is now assistant head of recruitment. So that is basically, in theory, just below the head of recruitment, who is, of course, Steve Nixon. So that's basically more to reflect what he actually does. And this was actually something which Dan Ashworth was supposedly heavily involved with changing. It was. I think that the change actually took place before Ashworth was placed on garden leave, but the reason it became public last week was, I think it was that Andy Howe changed his socials, and so then it became out in a public sphere. The suggestion from some was, this is the post-Ashworth reshuffle, this is Andy Howe being promoted, and the positions are changing. Positions haven't changed. There hasn't been a change of structure yet. It's just that Andy Howe's position has been redesignated to more reflect the fact that he, alongside Steve Nixon, is heavily involved in both the identification of players, but then also in those final discussions as to who those specific targets will be that Newcastle will actually go and try and sign.
Fair play. So that's Andy Howe, assistant to the regional manager, I think, is his full title, if we're going to go that way. We talked about the summer window and how big it feels. George, is there any sense that Newcastle might not be operating at 100%? And it's a crucial time, isn't it? They want to be firing on all cylinders this window.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. We have spoken about this window. It does feel like a massive summer of restructuring the first team. It feels like we're sort of at that point where this, not that the life of this team is coming to an end, but it does need refreshing. There are lots of positions, I think, that need strengthening. And I think there needs to be sales to bring in money. So I suppose you can argue that, yes, you would want a sporting director in place, someone who's able to take the bigger picture sort of decisions. You know, if you're the manager, it's very difficult to look long term because obviously you've got to protect your own position. You want things for your team in the here and now. Managers always want to strengthen. They always push. That's not having a go at managers. It's what they'll all say the same thing. They always want to strengthen. So you do need people who are able to sort of look at the bigger picture and say, well, hang on, we need to focus on this. But you are talking about a much more robust organisation now. It's not the days when it was basically manager Lee Charnley, Mike Ashley, and that was it.
Yeah.
Obviously, Steve Nixon was around then too. But, you know, it's there is a much bigger operation. And, you know, there are pulls in different directions because we know that FFP and PSR is still going to be a big deal this summer. But just repeating what I've said before and what Chris has kind of alluded to as well, there is a recruitment department and people who are skilled or have experience at bringing players in and selling players in terms of the owners. And that is what they're focusing on. I mean, that is definitely the message that we're getting from the top of the club, that this is absolutely the priority. So I don't think they're going to take their eye off the ball on this one. They can't. It is a massive summer. But yeah, in the future, you want there to be someone there who was able, from the football department to sort of look at the whole thing. Okay, you know, you're saying you want a left back, say, but well, we've got someone here who's coming through the academy who might be worth, you know, let's not block that. We may be able to, you know, need someone who's able to sort of do that. I'm not too worried for this particular window, but it is a position that, you know, it was a position that Newcastle absolutely wanted someone in for. They wanted Ashworth, who was seen as the best of the best.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't just dismiss that position now. They do need to strengthen it. But at the moment, they're saying they're pretty relaxed about it and that they're all focusing on the window.
And in terms of the window, I think there's paranoia is possibly too strong, but, you know, suspicion about Dan Ashworth, if he was to be in position at Manchester United before the summer, which is part of the reason why people inside the club believe that even if Newcastle reached some sort of financial agreement with Manchester United, that Ashworth shouldn't be in by the summer window, is because he is privy to a lot of the long-term plans that Newcastle had going into the summer. Plans will still need to be firmed up and targets, you still need to wait and see who may stay, who may go at Newcastle, contract situations with Joel Linton, Bruno Guimaraes' future, so many other things. But Newcastle have had long-term plans going in that summer, and obviously Dan Ashworth has been heavily involved in those. So that's part of the reason why some people at the club are very keen on him not to be at Manchester United before this summer, because they see that as potentially having had a potential detrimental effect on what they can do as well.
Fair play. Right then, chaps, let's have a quick break, and we'll be back after this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
I'd eat orchid.
Right then, boys, we've got all the dull football director of sport nonsense out the way, so let's talk about some proper 4-4-2 jumpers for goalposts football.
Thanks, Taylor, for that absolute vote of confidence in that brilliant piece that we wrote earlier
this
week.
I'm definitely coming around to your way of thinking, George, it has to be said. Definitely. Men don't play until Monday, do they? So the lasses will be up first. They've got another away day on Sunday afternoon heading down to Stourbridge, George.
Yes, and I mean, they just keep ticking the games off, don't they?
They do.
Won't take it for granted. They don't do that about anything. But Stourbridge are third from bottom. They've lost three in a row. So there's no reason why Newcastle, in the form they are, can't go and get a result. And it feels very close now. You know, they've got a big lead at the top over Forest. And, just another one to get through. But they'll be going there. They'll be targeting a win. We know they will.
Yeah, I had a nice chat to somebody on Saturday while I was watching the game, actually. And he said it was great hearing Amber on the podcast just the other week. And said she talked an awful lot of sense. It was better than listening to you three clowns as usual. So I thought that was quite good.
I mean, I can't say that that's harsh, but I can say it's fair. She was great. She's She is great. We'll have to do that again. She was really good. And I'm really proud that, you know, that we do focus on the women's team as much as we do. I think we've all sort of fallen in love with the team and what's happening there.
Absolutely.
And yeah, long may it continue. And certainly want to carry on doing that. While we're on this subject, something I'd like to plug, something that I'm kind of loosely involved with next week. The Tyneside Cinema, a brilliant institution in the centre of town, are showing a new film, new documentary film.
Documentary.
Documentary.
I'm sticking with that. That's apparently that's what it is.
You're barking up the wrong tree there, George, I'll be honest.
It's a documentary.
Documentary.
And it's about the unofficial 1971 Women's World Cup. It's called Copa 71. It's had 5-star review in The Guardian. Sounds absolutely incredible. Can't wait to watch it. Our mate, Charlotte Robson from True Faith, is hosting a panel afterwards, which I'm on, unbelievably. And Amber and Becky are going to be there.
Brilliant.
Have a chat. And also some representatives from Sunderland too. That's one thing we've not talked about. Next season in the Championship, derbies could be back. Very exciting. But that's being shown next Wednesday. That's the 13th. And please have a look at the Tyneside for tickets. Should be a good night.
She'll be a belter. Right then, Chelsea. Kieran Trippier out until the end of the month, roughly, Chris. It's actually a bit of a relief that's not worse, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when Trippier went off in the, I think it was about the 52nd minute against Wolves last weekend, he actually signalled to the bench eventually that he had to come off. The positive was that he was able to walk off the pitch. And then, as I mentioned on Monday, he did speak at the North East Football Writers Association dinner at the Ramside Hall on Sunday, spoke very well, except the part where he beat Eddie Howe, which obviously was about the injury, and he was waiting for the scan results on Monday. Now, our understanding is that the early prognosis from that is that Trippier is highly unlikely to play at Chelsea, highly unlikely to go back to his former club, Man City, in the FA Cup quarterfinal the following weekend. A doubt for England's two matches during the international break as well, but could hopefully be back by the end of the month. Now, Eddie Howe hasn't spoken about that yet. We're recording on Thursday, the press conference on Friday. We'll probably have less of an idea how Kieran Trippier is after that press conference on Friday. But yes, we're expecting that he isn't going to be in the team come next Monday night.
So that's Kieran Trippier to start against Chelsea on Monday. Just checking that, Chris, yeah? That's right?
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
maybe he doesn't want to relive that last trip to Stamford Bridge as well. George, you were there for a frustrating night in the Carabao Cup, weren't you?
Oh, I certainly don't want to relive it, yeah. Yeah, it was such a frustrating evening. I mean, funnily enough, there were sort of slight echoes to the match we've just seen, the Wolves game, in the sense that Newcastle were very, very well set up and structured. They defended a lot. Chelsea were garbage, I thought. It just felt like they were never, ever going to score. And, yeah, Trippier, of course, had a really tough December and he'd made a few errors. And then he came on at half-time, I think it was, for Emil Kraft. And then, of course, there was more of the same. And it was so out of character, that whole month, what we saw from Trippier. Someone who's been so important to the team, to the whole club since his takeover, you know, arguably, one of the most important signings in the club's history, arguably the most important in their recent history.
Definitely.
Just been so important. And he was just going through this awful, awful spell of, I mean, not so much form, but just sort of errors.
Usually so dependable as well, George, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And it was a bad night, and it was kind of one that got away from Newcastle. Obviously, there were, you know, it went to penalties and finished the way it did. And I'm sure Newcastle will want to sort of put that right if they can. It's not such a bad thing to have Tino Livramento to replace Trippier, a great, you know, great player, great young player. But we obviously hope that Trippier comes back soon. He has obviously in the time since just reiterated again what a fine player he is and an important player he is to Newcastle. And hope he comes back soon.
Just going back to the Ramsgate Hall, we did have a bit of a huddle with Kieran Trippier, and he gave us quite a bit of his time. And I'm not the quotes aren't out there yet and won't be out when this pod comes out, so I don't want to break any embargoes on that. But basically, Kieran Trippier himself still can't explain exactly what happened during December. He talks about that month as being bizarre in that sense as well. But he still fronted up. He fronted up again last weekend. And this is probably the only time in my career where actually I've been thanked by, we were all thanked as journalists by Kieran Trippier repeatedly for having voted for him. Usually there's a word that comes before off whenever we try to speak to most players. That's not true, but most players aren't usually as...
Did Fabian Scher tell you to fuck off, Chris? Is that what it was?
He was definitely thinking it. He was definitely thinking it when he was wearing... I mean, but I was also... That was probably
the shortest
because...
Trousers in the world,
well, that's
then,
probably because I was looking at his shortest trousers and his ankle socks or whatever and his weird brogues that he was wearing that time where he won his award. So, I mean, Alan Saint-Maximin did not even turn up for his award. He sat in the front of his car and sent in about a 10-second video, so that showed what he thought of it.
Amazing.
A few years ago.
We'd imagine then in that case, as Georgia mentioned before, Tino Livramento will start against Chelsea. You've been writing about him, Chris.
Well, I am in the process of writing about him, yes. So Tino Livramento was signed last summer. I think when Newcastle initially were going towards the best part of £40 million to pay for someone who many saw as a reserve right back, there was a lot of sort of question marks, and I had those same question marks looking at it.
Raised eyebrows, Chris.
Raised eyebrows, yes, exactly, last summer, because you're thinking Newcastle needed to do quite a lot of business in many people's eyes. They'd signed Sandro Tonali, and they were in a situation whereby they were going to have some PSR issues, but they targeted Tino Livramento and they ended up paying probably more than they initially intended, but they wanted to make sure that they got him last summer because they thought that if he had a good year throughout this season, that some of the very biggest clubs in Europe would be looking to sign him because he was coming back from an anterior cruciate knee ligament injury, but he is very, very highly rated. And I think that from his very first start against Manchester City at home in the Carabao Cup in September when he got man of the match, suddenly, and there was chants about Tino, those bringing back the Faustino Asprilla chants for Tino Livramento. You saw at that stage, I think fans started to realise that there may be a special talent on their hands here. And a lot of fans have wanted to see him in the team sooner. part of the reason why he was recruited and why he was seen as such a priority last summer was because of how important Kieran Trippier is to Newcastle. Obviously, Trippier leads the Premier League for assists this season. He has 10 assists. He's vital to Newcastle, certainly in an attacking sense, leadership-wise, defensively. And the fear throughout all of last season was that they might lose Trippier from week to week. Fortunately, they didn't. But because he's so central to how they play, even though Tino Livramento stylistically is slightly different, he still brings so much. And to everyone's surprise, including Newcastle's recruitment staff, he's turned out to be very efficient at left-back as well. He barely played there even throughout his youth career, but he's shown he can play in that role as well. But he's going to now get, seemingly, at least a couple of games in the Premier League in his out-and-out position of right-back. He's only started two Premier League matches at right-back for Newcastle so far, and it will be fascinating to see how he fares going back to what was his former club where he left for Southampton when he was young.
And we haven't spoke to you yet, George, since Tino got on the score sheet last week for the first time in what I'm calling a bundle bastard, that goal. It just sort of forced it into the goal with sheer will, didn't he? But it was brilliant to see him score. And he's just a bloody good footballer, isn't he?
Yes, it's very exciting. You sort of almost, you know, it's that thing every time you see him play, you think, oh, I want to see him play more. And then it's like, ah, yeah. But is he going to play ahead of Kieran Trippier, who I totally love? And he is a very, very good, he is a very, very good footballer, and incredibly promising, very exciting. And, you know, if only Newcastle had had the same sort of strength all over the pitch during this horrible season when it comes to sort of injuries and people missing. And of course, it's a big contrast to that other Chelsea old boy, Lewis Hall, who everybody has forgotten all about, no one ever mentions.
Yeah, and nobody ever asks about him in press conferences, Chris, do they? Why is that?
This is what I am very...
Why have you never asked a question? But come on, Chris, what is it? What's the agenda, Chris?
What's the agenda of your documentary?
So, yes, this is something which regularly people reply to various Northeast journalists and ask, why haven't you asked about Lewis Hall in press conference? And Eddie Howe, I can assure you, has been asked, not every single week, because what's he going to say differently every single week, but he has been asked about Lewis Hall, what he needs to do to earn a position. He was even asked a few weeks ago about the fact that Newcastle are going to, as things stand, it seems they are going to have to still pay the money to Chelsea this summer to make the deal permanent, £28 million. And Howe said he was referring more to transfers in general without being specific about Lewis Hall, but also referred to potential transfer mistakes, which obviously some have queried one to the other and said, if you look at last summer, that does seem a questionable deal, because he's only started 4 games in all competitions. He's been hooked at half-time in 4 matches as well. He's not started since November the 11th. So far in 2024, he's had 2 substitute appearances totaling 12 minutes. And so he obviously is ineligible to play against Chelsea on Monday, because they are his parent club. But the likelihood is he wouldn't have featured anyway, because he just isn't even getting on. Even when Newcastle were going through their injury crisis, he was struggling to get on in matches. And Tino Livramento, as I mentioned before, was getting selected as a left-back ahead of the actual left-back who Newcastle signed. And with Matt Target coming back soon from his hamstring injury, he's back in training, you'd think that opportunities are going to become even less for Lewis Hall. Now, Howe has admitted publicly that maybe Lewis Hall still needs a bit of work defensively, and I think Newcastle have been a little bit surprised. I think they thought Hall was further on in his development defensively than he actually is when they signed him. He is still being converted into a left-back. He was a midfielder throughout most of his youth career.
Yeah.
And he is a Newcastle fan, and Newcastle still do have high hopes for him. But between now and the end of the season, I think he's going to find game time increasingly limited with more and more players coming back. And there will be question marks then if and when the transfer does become permanent as to what the plan is going forward. There's been suggestions this week he could go out on loan next season. All of that is up in the air at this stage. There's been no decisions on that front, I don't think. But he's only 19, whereas Tino Livramento is 2 years further on in his development. Tino Livramento has also played a heck of a lot more football at senior level. He was playing regularly as an 18-year-old for Southampton. So the two get directly compared, because they were signed last summer as the two who were going to be long-term successors on either side to both Kieran Trippier and Dan Byrne as the fullbacks, potential England fullbacks of the future, I think some people at the club were looking at that. But it's not necessarily a directly fair comparison. And yeah, as things stand, I don't think Lewis Hall is that much closer to playing regularly for Newcastle.
Fair enough. I hope that answers your question, everybody out there listening, about why Chris never asks Eddie Howe about Lewis Hall. There we go. Speaking of fullbacks, Emil Kraft hasn't scored a goal yet this season. So there's a record that we are chasing, isn't there, Chris?
There is, and actually Lewis Hall could also be a potential record breaker if he does get out on the field on this. So this is Lewis Hall has scored. So this is about scoring goals, but he has not scored in the Premier League. Newcastle have 19 different scorers in the Premier League so far this season. Tino Livramento became the 19th last weekend, and that is by far the most in this season's Premier League, four ahead of anyone else, other teams. It's also the most in Newcastle's Premier League history by quite a distance. Well, by two, I think it was 17, but they are actually only one behind the record holders, who are Manchester United of 2012-13 vintage. So not just any Manchester United side either, the last Manchester United side to win the title in the season that Sir Alex Ferguson retired. Yeah, Jacob did, on the run note, Ollie, saying we did mention this briefly on Jacob on Monday, we didn't mention that there could be potential record breakers. So if one more player scores, Newcastle would join that. And in some ways, this both shows the injury problems Newcastle have had. So they've had to use so many players.
Yeah.
And they've had to share the goals around because they haven't actually got that many individual scorers who've scored a lot of goals. Most of the team have had to chip in with several at different points beyond Isak, who's gone into double figures. Nobody else has gone into double figures for Newcastle this season. But I think there is also something, impressive is the wrong word, but it shows the resilience within the squad that they've managed to, so many players have managed to come in and actually contribute.
Yeah.
For 19 players to get on the score sheet across the course of the season, that is in itself important to where Newcastle have managed to get themselves to in the table. It shows it's been far from ideal because of injuries and suspensions, but at the same time, other players have come in and they have found a way to make those important contributions.
Even Matt Ritchie scored.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's absolutely, brilliant. I mean, but it's, it is, I mean, Chris is absolutely spot on in the way that he's analysed this. I mean, there's not going to be
what was that word as open well? Top. An analysed.
What was that word? An analysed.
I was analysed. Analysed. The documentary. I can't remember what the other word was.
Good.
Yeah, I seem to have forgotten the gift. The gift of speech is not giving today, not. Is it? Is. Maybe I'll just stop talking. No, I'm going to say, I do think it's important. I mean, it is important. You're not going to get a trophy for, you know, most goal scorers in the Premier League ever or anything like that. But, I mean, Newcastle have needed those goal scorers. Yeah. And you always want this. It's great having strikers who are scoring 20 goals a season, but you want other bits of the team to chip in. And the fact that Newcastle have had that this season, A, has been absolutely necessary, but it's a good thing. You know, people, you know, Newcastle as a team have been brilliant at their very, very best, mainly last season, at defending from the front.
Yeah.
But you also want everybody to, you know, to attack from the back. You know, if you want to reverse that, the fact that everybody can get a goal is great.
I want Fabian Scherer on penalties, by the way. I just want to put that out there now.
I mean, Alexander Isak and Callum Wilson are both pretty good at penalties as well, to be fair.
I don't care. They don't kick the ball as sexily as Fabian Scherer does. I want a David Unsworth situation here. Mind you, he used to just blat them, didn't he?
If Newcastle are still in the hunt for the most goal scorers in Premier League era trophy come the end of May, I want Nick Pope or Martin Dubravka to step forward and take free kicks and corners and penalties.
Paul Dummett's another one who can score. He's another one who can add to that sort of list.
Yeah.
There's 13 players who have appeared for Newcastle so far this season in the Premier League who haven't scored yet. One of them can't because Michael Ndwenny is out on loan.
Yeah.
But the other 12 all still have the opportunity.
Elliot Anderson could do it.
Elliot Anderson, he seems the most likely. If you're looking at a player who is A, going to get a decent amount of minutes and plays an attacking position, Elliot Anderson seems the most likely to pull them level. But they need two if they want to be out-and-out record breakers.
Elliot Anderson to level it up, Paul Dummett with his final kick of a ball in a Newcastle shirt to break the record. There we go.
Are you just ending his Newcastle career there? You just decided.
Tim Dunn, isn't it?
That would be the way for him, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to go out, on a high. Chelsea, though, George, they could be there for the taking, couldn't they? They haven't been brilliant recently.
Well, no, not, you know, they definitely were for that League Cup game. I've always liked the League Cup, by the way. Now that we've been drawn against Man City in the FA Cup, I just want to say that it's always been the League
That's
Cup.
That's the one that you want, isn't it?
I'm looking forward to it's the one you want. I'm looking forward to August. I think they are. I thought they were dreadful that night. I mean, I know they got through, and that's all that really matters. And they are, you know, clearly having a Very, very difficult season. What are they, 11th in the table, I think, at the minute?
Yeah.
And certainly during their 2-2 draw with Brentford, they went 2-1 down, and then away fans were starting to chant the name of Jose Mourinho and Roman Abramovich, which is not great if you're Mauricio Pochettino. No. It's probably not great anyway, to be fair. But things aren't going well for them. Things aren't easy. It was always going to be a big, I think it's going to be a big job for Pochettino this season. And obviously they've, you know, spent a huge amount of money. They've really struggled to kind of assimilate their gigantic squad. Yeah. So if you're Newcastle, having just had that really good performance at home, it's the first thing you're going to be saying. It's, you know, keep the cow.
Jesus.
Keep the cow quiet on this documentary. Keep the cow quiet in this documentary, and we'll all be very satisfied at the end of the
what is
day.
Going on?
God. Keep the cow. I might just leave this podcast. I've given all there is to give.
You've had a week off as well. What's going on?
I need another rest.
Come on.
I know, but I've forgotten how to speak.
It's ridiculous.
Practice makes perfect.
Anyhow, last thing he says to the players before they go on Monday night, just keep the cow.
Keep the cow.
Keep the cow.
Keep the cow. Keep the cow.
Oh.
Don't park the puss. Oh, puss. Don't bark the puss. Keep the cow.
Okay,
quite interesting. Apple have just updated their software. You can now get full transcripts of podcasts on Apple. I can't wait to read this one.
Yeah.
So sorry, everybody.
It'll make a lot more sense written down. Definitely. Right then. Okay, let's finish things. Jesus Christ, please, let's finish things off. Even the dogs get upset. God, right. Excuse me, I've got a clear throat.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Come on, you Maggies.
Right then, chaps, let's put an end to this madness. Let's finish things off. A couple of little things before we do that. Amanda Staveley's been talking at a Bloomberg event. The Newcastle United owners been talking in Jeddah, Chris, is that right?
She has indeed, yes. It's the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix this weekend, and she is out there ready for the Grand Prix. But there is this sort of Bloomberg event where they're speaking variously about sort of business of football type things. She has spoken previously on panels at the Financial Times event, which she didn't actually do it this year when she was initially meant to, but she has been speaking out there, and she's spoken about I suppose the most interesting thing about Newcastle. She didn't really bite on transfers and about the summers when she was asked if Newcastle make a big signing, but what she did say was she once again reiterated that Newcastle have been looking at potential multi-club models. We know it's something they've discussed previously, but she said that they've looked in Belgium, other places across Europe, Asia, Australia, America. And so that basically that is something that going forward Newcastle are still considering, or at least the consortium are still considering. Do they want to follow almost the sort of Man City group approach? Do they want the economies of scale you get with that, the ability to bring players in? And the UEFA are going to have new registration rules, and so therefore it might be of even greater benefit to have a club whereby you can train certain players, get them to a certain level, get them maybe playing in the same way as the style you want, and then you can potentially trade them on or bring them into your first team. And so the fact that she confirmed that again publicly, I think, is probably the main takeaway from a Newcastle United point of view.
Newcastle have been given an award as well, George, the first Premier League Club of Refuge, with a lot of good work done by the foundation involved in this one as well.
Yes, I mean, so they're the first Premier League club to be awarded Football Club of Sanctuary status, and it's about supporting people in the city who are seeking refuge. Now, that can mean lots of things. People will look at Newcastle's, you know, ultimate ownership and perhaps perhaps have opinions on this, but it's really important to point out just how influential, just what great work the foundation does. Foundation is the Newcastle's charitable arm. I saw some of this firsthand myself. I went to visit the Sir Bobby Robson room, which had been turned into a helping hand at Christmas room over Christmas and New Year. People were able to come in, and there was work with the food bank, which we know about so well. People were able to come in and get food and not be shamed. And also, this award is also part of people who are claiming asylum, refugees. That's things to be very, very proud of. We are a very welcoming city. We always have been. We've been very proud of the way that we treat people. And it's great to see Newcastle be awarded like this. The foundation is an incredible organisation. I went to the annual dinner not too long ago, saw firsthand some of the stories of people who both work there and have been helped by the foundation. It does great work across the region and the city, and it's just brilliant to see it get an award like this. It's something to be very, very proud of.
Absolutely, it is fabulous stuff. Right, then, that's about it, chaps. Get in touch at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X, and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. Right, then, thanks very much, Chris.
You're very welcome. I'm just looking forward to the bovine puns that Ollie's going to put into the whatever the headline of this pod is going to be.
Yeah, George, let's hope you can recover the power of speech before Thursday. That would be great. Before Monday, even. Sorry, it's Thursday today, isn't it?
Yeah, the bovine puns. I mean, there's quite often a lot of bullshit spoken, but I mean, I came literally quite close to that on today's pod. Normally, we try and record in English. we'll try and go back to that next week. I think it's been an interesting experiment.
Yes.
This animal-related language, documentary, park the cow, whatever.
Gibberish.
Gibberish.
That's what it is.
But we'll, I think it's just a one-off. say that
never
very bravely,
as if
I can possibly say that. God, yeah.
Right then, that's it. Thank you very much for listening. I'm going to go and lie down in a darkened room for half an hour, I think. Thanks a lot for listening to Pod on the Tyne. We'll be back next week. Take care. Have a good weekend. Look after yourselves. Bye-bye.
What the hell?
Yeah. Fucking figure that out.
The Athletic.